let's go back to this report. I want to talk a little bit about the idea that this has become experimentation versus having a medical doctor on hand to just guarantee that everyone's being treated properly. What right. this report is saying is that there's a difference between checking vitals to make sure everyone's okay and then using that information to adjust a program so that you can basically go further. That's what my understanding is from these physicians, is that the program was designed to quantify, for instance, the hormones generated in the system,
right.
and give this information. I don't know if it was going back to Langley or where it's going, if it's going all the way up to the White House or whatever, but to customize a system, what at the time was being called enhanced interrogation techniques or enhanced interrogation program. How does that differ from how you guys would be taking information with a soldier who's in training and you're trying to, you know, test their physiological responses? What's the main difference there?
Well, there's a big difference. Well, first, I'd like to say that, you know, as someone who is trying very hard to put a knife in the back of Al-Qaeda and make that organization cease to exist, it just literally fascinates me as to how low we can go to assist Al-Qaeda in literally framing us for exactly what they've said they've done. Until I saw this Physicians for Human Rights report, I thought, there's not very much lower we can go with regards to debasing ourselves with torture, other than, you know, to let Lynn and Dick Cheney go around and George Bush claim that this was the best thing that they've ever done. But this report is just disgusting, okay? I take the fight against the terrorists very, very seriously. No one wants to put an end to Osama bin Laden and the Al-Qaeda organization as much as I do. But we literally, this report is almost ammunition. Not for Al-Qaeda because, you know, it's something Al-Qaeda can use, but it's literally us shooting ourselves in the foot. The SEER program was designed to help people endure captivity, get through it, come home and see their family again. We had doctors and medical staff on there, corpsmen and medical doctors and a staff psychiatrist, for the protection of the person who was going through those techniques. The doctor was not watching the person to see whether he should get six, you know, 5 or 10 more cups of water.
Right.
He was there to ensure that physiologically he would not go through any harm that could not be controlled by the waterboard team. Anybody on the waterboard team could stop a waterboarding. The doctor had ultimate authority to stop it. Even if he just didn't like the way the person's eyes were fluttering, he could stop it for any reason whatsoever. And every person would respect that because they knew that the doctor and the medical staff at SEER were there for the protection of the student. What it appears here, now I've read this report very carefully. Like I said, it appears that, as they write in this report, the doctors were present to determine, you know, the methodologies that could be used to make their future torture and interrogation more, how can I put it, tailored to allow the captive to give us more information. They took that to shape the future interrogation.
Right.
And that right there is what they're arguing is a war crime. Because they literally took this information. They would experiment, so to speak, with how much water should be used here, whether water should, you know, whether this technique would work and be more effective to get them within the parameters of not causing severe and long-lasting pain. And that is just not the role of anyone who's in the health profession.
One of the things that just shocked me, I had to read the paragraph maybe 3 times, was, and even look up the word, even though I think I knew what it meant, was putting these guys on a liquid diet so that if they threw up,
yeah,
that the material inside would be just soft enough that they, you know, we could control. And out to the side, if we had to, we could quickly cut them open and save them from their own vomit. I mean, this is stuff I thought I was reading about with Mengele and these guys back, you know, 60 years ago. That we would have people actually sitting off to the side and preparing to give you a tracheotomy.
It's certainly not on the scale of the Nazis. You know, I have to say that. But morally, it's equal to the fact that we would have people there who would put these people on this the liquid diet. The word was emesis, which is to soften the material that would be puked up so that they wouldn't drown in their own vomit.
Right.
And I think that is a shocking part of it, as they called it in the report, waterboarding 2.0.
Right.
This was not Sears waterboarding, and they make that very clear in the report. What they did was they took Sears waterboarding, which was the Cambodian waterboarding technique, the Khmer Rouge's board, and they just decided to make it more efficient in terms of their torture. Now, what struck me as the most damning thing, which shows that someone was giving this a lot of thought and that the techniques were literally designed to be abusive, was when they switched from water to saline solution, potable saline solution. The only reason that you would want somebody to have potable saline solution is, A, you're going to have so much water going through that person that you were going to damage the linings of the lungs, the throat, and the sinuses. Or, as I've seen it written, they were worried about hyponatremia, which is the ingestion of too much water. And the only way that you can get hyponatremia is if that water goes into your stomach and then through your intestines, and it washes out all of the electrolytes. And that shows that your technique is not even part of the waterboarding process. Water should never go down the esophagus in waterboarding. That's what we convicted the Japanese for in World War II.
Right.
Because they were filling the belly so much, the bellies were bloating and distending like basketballs full of water. Someone gave that some thought and made them believe that, hey, you know, we really need to use saline solution so that these prisoners could process this down, or in case they threw up. And in case they do drown, we need to do an emergency tracheotomy on them. So they had a trach kit off to the side. And, you know, prudent practice, yes. But it appears that, as they say here, this is waterboarding 2.0. This is just them refining a torture to make the torture more efficient for their own technique.
I know that we don't know the minds of the people who wanted this program in place. I can project all I want that I think I do, but I really don't necessarily know their mindset. Do you believe, being a little closer up to you, do you believe that there's anyone in that system who, at least for a moment, thought we were in such a serious, because this is one of their arguments. I call it the special pleading, which is that, like John Kiriakou likes to say that, you know, well, I don't believe it now, but at the time, we had to do that. Do you think that there are people who really, in that decision-making process, do you really believe that they held that view, or is that a little convenient for you?
It's far too convenient for me. As a matter of fact, you know, I was a Navy chief at the time, and as I like to say, you know, chiefs are the people who come up from the deck plate. We're in the Navy, we're the ground truth. Our job is to tell you when you're out of your mind. And I know when I first heard all of these processes and procedures going on, my first thought was, there is no real middle management involved in this. This has got to be high-level civilians. It's got to be high-level military people who have all convinced themselves that, okay, maybe being a good guy was the way it should have been before, but now we've got to take the gloves off and we've got to be the tough guy. You know, and as a matter of fact, when I wrote my article for Small Wars Journal, Waterboarding is Torture, period, I had a letter from a Marine general, and he said, you know, I'm afraid to say it, I was on board with waterboarding in this interrogation, but until you said it, you reminded me of one of my Marine gunnery sergeants, my old gunny, who said, General, right is right and wrong is wrong. Wrong is wrong, and you know this is wrong. And I realized at that time, no one stood up for what was right here. They all decided, hey, if the president thinks this is a good idea, then it's a good idea.
And after all, they're bad guys.
Of course. Now, I come from the what-the-fuck school of business part of my language. I don't know if we can use that language. So I'm putting my chief's hat on here.
There you go.
And first thing that should have happened was the people in the SEER program, the SEER officers, the SEER chiefs, should all have said, hey, what do you think you're doing? This is the techniques of our enemy. These have literally been paid for with the blood of thousands of U.S. service members. I will not stand for this. Now, you'll get walked over, but you'll have put it out there. Someone needed to come up and put the WTF question mark in the minds of the decision makers. Now, I'm a writer and an academic now in the counterterrorism community.
Right.
But still, you have to step back to what your sense of honor should have been telling you. And it appears that the honor of the United States was thrown out the window, and to them, they took on what we call this Tom Clancy-esque sort of attitude towards what they thought was right. And, you know, the devil be damned, we're going to go forward with whatever it is we think is right in order to save American lives. Well, you know, that's great. And I think that if you wish to confess to crimes and you're willing to go before court and you're willing to argue your case that you had to break the law, then you need to go ahead and do that. But what you don't do is come up here and take 2 centuries of American jurisprudence and even worse, dead soldiers who have paid for these techniques to resist these techniques in their own blood and lives. And then take the enemy's technique, call it our own, and say that it's good. And this is where my entire argument in the torture debate is strictly as a matter of honor for those who've come before us and died in order to get us this information. And I think it's despicable and disgusting that any one of these people would say that they served this nation with any measure of honor by saying that they're glad that they did these things. No, these people need to be held to account. Simple as that.
You're listening to Veracity Radio. We're talking with Malcolm Nance, SEER instructor and counterterrorism expert, and we want to thank you for joining our show. I want to apologize to you for the question I'm about to ask, and I thought long and hard whether I wanted to ask this question. And the reason I think it might be patently clear, but I don't want to give an ounce of time to people who don't deserve it. But I think we have to, unfortunately.
Okay.
And that's to deal with someone like Mark Thiessen, Frank Gaffney, Liz Cheney, Dick Cheney. We'll keep Richard B. Cheney a little bit to the side there. He's got a different role in this. But Mark Thiessen appears on many shows, especially the one I caught him on that really irked me most was on the C-SPAN one morning when he was explaining to the callers how these techniques worked and that, frankly, everyone else is just simply wrong. I'd like to have on the record a response from you to not just Thiessen, but Liz Cheney or any of the other ones who, having never served in the military, by the way, so easily advocate these positions.
Mark Thiessen, what can I say? Let me put it into this perspective. On the morning of September 11th, without anybody asking me to, I went to the Pentagon attack, which happened right in front of my face, all right? And I worked around with military people all day with 200 dead in front of me. I understand the reason that we're fighting the fight that we're doing. But to have a speechwriter who I've spoken to get out in front of this nation, write a book, and swear that the United States has been protected, the CIA officers served honorably in going out and torturing these terrorists, and that we're safer for it, and that that Obama administration is going to bring about an act of terrorism because we're not torturing people. That's just disgusting. I don't know who he is. He has no background in the military. He sits down in front of a typewriter. I have served. I am a combat veteran. I have seen life. I have seen death in war. I have fought this war on terrorism, and I will continue to fight this war on terrorism until Osama bin Laden is in the ground and the Al-Qaeda ideology is broken. But I don't need to hear from him or Lynn Cheney or Dick Cheney about what was right and what was wrong and what was honorable within the United States military, because what they did and what they chose to do created an entire wing of Al-Qaeda that never existed before. I have people who have died at the hands of these people, whose blood is on the hands of those who advocate torture because they have validated Osama bin Laden's worldview, and he markets throughout the Middle East on that very point every day. I am sick of having to spend the first 30 minutes of every conversation that I have in the Middle East discussing, apologizing, and showing that America is better than what Dick Cheney and Mark Thiessen advocate. Those people are disgraceful. They should have no place within polite society, and they need to be called out for the torture lovers that they are. I don't know whether he's a sadist personally, but I personally believe that they enjoyed the idea of inflicting pain and suffering on the people that they had in our captivity, whether they were Al-Qaeda members or not. And that leads me to believe that maybe sadism is a part of this. But whether it is or not, these are the people that we would pull off the line if they were anywhere near a student in the SEER program. We don't have time to have people literally creating more trouble than it's worth. Torture does not work. It has been the hallmark of U.S. policy since General George Washington wrote his orders on the treatment of captives. And Mark Thiessen, Dick Cheney, Lynn Cheney, Frank Gaffney, Rifkin, all of the rest of the torture lovers are going to have to answer this someday, especially when the first U.S. service member is captured by another nation and is tortured in the same way, and then they come out and say, we're sorry, we're only using your techniques.
Do you think that, considering that Dick Cheney confessed to his role in this December 2008, and Bush apparently, I don't have the audio, and apparently neither does anyone else, but a little over a week ago, very flippantly, by the way, said, yeah, you know, we waterboarded Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. I'd do it again. You know, yeah, I'd make that same decision again.
Disgraceful.
Do you think that these people need to face war crimes trials or some criminal accountability?
There needs to be accountability. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately for George Bush and Dick Cheney, if we don't take it on, there are other nations that will. Look, Augusto Pinochet was locked into Chile for the rest of his life because he couldn't move. The Spanish wanted him for torture and murder of their citizens.
Right.
If the civilized world is going to make it very difficult for them to constantly to travel within the confines of the Western world, so be it. All right. I know what's wrong here. I know that if I'm called upon to give my opinion, I'll give my opinion in that legal setting. But, you know, when you confess to war crimes or you confess to things which are against the law in the U.S. Code, mm-hmm. then you need to be held to account. Because many, many thousands of Americans have died at the hands of an Al-Qaeda that did not exist when they authorized these tortures, and those tortures at Abu Ghraib, which Mark Thiessen says has nothing to do with how Al-Qaeda operates or how Al-Qaeda recruits. These people joined because of the horror of what was being done to average captives. Had those captives been treated fairly and been treated and interrogated in a proper setting and given the rights that we should have afforded them, we would never have to fear for how another U.S. service member is treated in our future. And we would probably have broken Al-Qaeda in Iraq years before they were turned on by their former allies, the Ba'athists. This is all unnecessary, and it just shows the mindless, childlike way that non-professionals think about this. I've had the opportunity to tell Mark Thiessen to his face, maybe not to his first, but we had a conversation where as a combat veteran, I'm disgusted by the very fact that he, who is just a speech writer, was read into a highly classified program with the intent to have him apologize for it and rewrite history. Just disgusting.
From what I, just for the listeners so they understand what that means, is that from my understanding, Michael Hayden pulled him aside, showed him, basically tried to validate Thiessen's view with just enough, maybe I would assume, just enough information.
No, he was read into the program.
Okay.
He was given the full classified briefing into the torture program. He knew every aspect mm-hmm. of it. He knew all. Once you're read into the program, they tell you everything.
Right.
Because they don't want you to not know anything. Then once you're read out of that program, you're theoretically not supposed to discuss it.
Right.